Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
My question to start the day is, hey, Clipper fan, how you feeling this morning? How did last night feel? Better yet, how are these bros feeling?
Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Hey, bros, how you feeling?
Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Man, you know those guys wanted to win that game last night. You know those guys wanted that game so badly. You know the Clippers wanted that game so badly. And it was right there for them until LeBron ripped it away. Yeah, that's got to sting. Right before he went in for his own miss and followed that up, you know he said, oh! That's going to leave a mark. But before we unpack that, let's take a step back. Last night was different. I mean, whether you want to call it the restart, the reboot, a whole new game, whatever phrase that you want to drop on that, whatever phrase you want to use for what we're watching in the bubble, I mean on the campus, the NBA is playing games right now, and they do count. And it is still taking a little bit of time to get used to. They've been playing in Orlando for more than a week, and I'm still not quite used to hearing nearly every single sound on the court, from a hand hitting the ball, to guys talking, to shoes squeaking. I'm really not sure that I'm used to the virtual fans that they've added along the sides of the court and behind the backboards. I mean, I get where the league is going with that. I'm just not sure I get it. In fact, I know that I don't get it. I'm not sure that's working. As for the basketball itself, obviously there was rust. A lot of rust. But it is something, right? And it's going to get better. You know the Clippers are thinking that after last night. And yes, I know they're missing some key guys at the moment. I know things could be different if and when the battle for LA in Orlando takes place in the playoffs. But let's be real, okay? Last night stings, doesn't it, Clipper fan? The Clippers lost to the Lakers right before the league went on hiatus in March. Then they promptly lost to them in their first game back in July. And no, I'm not going to overreact, and I'm not going to read too much into last night. Teams are still figuring out their rosters. They're still getting into their flow and their rhythm. And no, it wasn't always pretty. And in fact, it was downright sloppy. But you know Clipper fans are pissed. Pissed about the fact that they've lost two straight to the Lakers. And it was right there for them last night. Double-digit lead in the third quarter. And they let it get away. I'm telling you, it was right there for the Clippers. LeBron had an off-night shooting. The Lakers are missing key members of their backcourt. And still, the Clippers with that double-digit lead in the third couldn't finish. The Lakers are without Avery Bradley, Rajon Rondo. You know what that means? That means more Deion Waiters. And that means someone is going to end up in the blender.
Swing as they come to half court. Waiters goes through. Oh, the spin by Bubble Cheese.
Nice job of splitting the defenders with the spin.
Right? If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, I'm not sure what I love more. Waiters' spin move or my man JaVale McGee replicating the spin move on the bench. So great. I'll tell you what was weird, though. How weird was this? There was a stretch in the third when the Lakers had Deion Waiters, Alex Caruso, KCP, Kyle Kuzma, and Anthony Davis all on the floor. That is a weird-ass lineup. But it worked. They were plus five in the 5 minutes that they were all out there. No Bradley and Rondo means more Caruso. And that's always a good thing. The show's favorite player, the world's favorite player, your favorite player's favorite player lived up to the hype yet again. You see, my guy, he's not a meme. He's a stud. He's a difference maker on both ends of the floor. You knew he'd step up when it mattered most, and AC Fresh did exactly that, coming up with a critical steal late.
It's Kawhi Leonard. On the hip is LeBron James. And hand it off now to Shannon. Oh, hands. Caruso! What a great defensive play by Alex.
Yeah, that was a great job by Caruso.
Hell yes, it was. I've said it before. I'll say it again right now. Big-time players make big-time plays in big-time games. And I'll say this again. Anytime you're ready to hear how awesome you are on this, player, I'm here for it. You know where to find me, AC. Anytime you want to hear how awesome you are on this show, you know where to find me, Caruso. I'm right here. Except it wasn't just the Caruso. Anthony Davis was a monster. He shook off that eye injury to go 34-8-4. Now, this dude is a problem. This dude is a problem now, especially for the Clippers. I mean, they can throw Paul George and Kawhi Leonard at LeBron James, but they do not have an answer for Anthony Davis. When AD plays the five, the Clippers are in trouble. I know AD doesn't like playing the five, but he's got to like the results, which was a mix of him getting whatever shot he wanted and wearing out a path to the free throw line. And when Anthony Davis is doing this, you can go ahead and cancel Christmas or whatever else is important to you.
AD for three. Yes, sir. Deion Waiters. Here he is going hard to the hole. Touch pass. Davis, two in a row. Got it. AD, two in a row, and the Lakers are back in the lead.
I mean,
AD, what's good, baby?
What is good, baby? I'll tell you what's stupid. I don't know what's good, but I know what's stupid. That is stupid. That is really stupid. A seven-footer stepping out and dropping threes like a shooting guard. Man, that is so wrong. And if you're a Clipper fan, you have to be thinking the final sequence of that game was even more wrong. LeBron had been having a really tough night. And then, with just over 12 seconds left, he comes through like this. The miss and the follow for the game winner.
The defenders were just seeing if he was going to make one.
Now the Lakers will need to shoot. Here's LeBron, leans in short, gets it back and scores. LeBron off the front of the rim, and the Lakers lead it 103-101 with 12.8 remaining.
I got to admit, watching that, and I really don't care. You know me, I don't root for anything other than something to talk about. But watching LeBron have the trouble he had last night shooting the ball and then want the ball in that situation and miss that shot and come through with the follow for the game winner, one thing went through my mind when I saw that. Oh! I'm not sure what's more galling if you're a Clipper fan. That LeBron had the game winner after an off night, or the fact that he blew right by four Clippers to get the rebound and put back. Let's be really clear about that. That he blew right by four guys for that put back. And then he played lockdown defense to close the whole thing out.
Here go the Clippers down by two. Kawhi's got it. You see the clock. LeBron on Kawhi. George, he's way outside, a lunging three, no, rebound, Caruso, that's it, Lakers have won.
The defense by LeBron as
yes,
well.
Yes, good point.
Started on Kawhi, got switched out on Paul George. I mean, that's stellar defense there by LeBron.
Kevin freaking Harlan, if you need him. My man, Kevin, what's up, bro? You sound great. I missed you. As far as the Lakers and Clippers go, we are past the point of the big brother, little brother. Alvy, come on. Big brother, little brother, narrative. But didn't that feel like a big brother, little brother, all over again? You see, big brother didn't have his best game, but found a way to stay in it and then ripped it right out of the hands of little brother. Clipper fan, I mean, I know it is what it is, and it's only one game, but that's got to hurt. And if it doesn't hurt, then you just don't care. Now, I am a glass half full brother. And I bet it feels good, or it didn't feel so good, to get punched in the face again. I'm sure that didn't feel good. I mean, getting your jaw broken and suffering a little pain does not feel good. But you know what I think? I think getting your jaw broken and feeling some pain is better than going months without feeling anything at all, right? Right? So you got to take that. 1-800-636-8686. Toll free. Lakers get it done. Clippers had it. And they ripped it right out of little brother's hands.
Brother.
This episode is brought to you by Fracture. Fracture turns your digital images into beautiful glass prints. That's right. They print your photos directly on glass, transforming your memories into handcrafted, frameless prints. Absolutely gorgeous. Beautiful thing to have. Fracture helps you focus on the moments that matter most by turning those favorite memories into beautiful glass prints. Fracture prints directly on durable glass with soft edges for safe handling. And every print comes with a 100% happiness guarantee. If for any reason you do not absolutely love that print, Fracture will make it right. Fracture prints look incredible. You really need to see them to believe it. Upload your photo at fractureme.com/Rome to print your photo today on glass. And we've got a special deal for you listeners. When you visit fractureme.com/Rome and you enter the promo code Rome, you'll get 20% off your order. That's fractureme.com/Rome. Enter the promo code Rome and save 20% off your Fracture glass print. I'm hyped on Fracture, and I do appreciate their sponsorship of this podcast. He is Chris Haynes. Chris, my man, what's going on? How are you?
Man, I'm doing all right, bro. Thanks for having me, bro.
Good to have you. Listen, before we get into last night and the return of basketball, I want to rephrase that first question. Exactly how are you doing and how is life in the bubble right about now for you?
So I've been, Rome, I've been here a little over a month now. I got here June 29th. I was like one of two media members allowed in the bubble early before anybody got here. So I've kind of seen how things have changed over time, and, you know, I see how I was used as a guinea pig to create barriers and borders because I had free reign to roam the campus when I was here. And so I was, you know, eating at the same restaurants as the players, walking the same pathways and jog trails as the players. And then when the rest of the media was cleared to be here, about 2 weeks ago, then they put barriers around where we can't intermingle with the players, which is okay. That's fine. But, you know, it's different, man. It's a new norm. You get tested every day. You got to go do your thermometer reading and your oximeter reading, all that before you even leave the room. You know, it's real strict. You know? But I think if you look at the testing over the last 2 weeks, zero positive tests. So I guess they know what they're doing.
Yeah, right? Like it's working. So it might be kind of a pain, and it might be the new norm, but it's actually working. You know, so when you lay it out like that, Chris, and what you have to go through just day to day to do your job, how good was it to actually do your job? How did it feel to be back covering a meaningful NBA game last night?
Yeah, it was surreal. It was surreal. You know, I'm blessed and fortunate. You know, the times we're in with, you know, social unrest and, you know, being a black man, being able to cover the first game ever in the restart, you know, for the Pels Jazz game. And it was just unreal. Like, as soon as I finished that game, Rome, I walked down the hill to watch the Lakers and Clippers. And then when I walk in, I'm walking past Damian Lillard, C.J. McCollum, Carmelo Anthony, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook. Like, they're all sitting there watching the game. Like, that's just an experience that's just unheard of. That's, you can't make that up. The only thing I can relate it to as far as just the setup and how things are is like the AAU tournament. And that, when players are going to other games, you just never see that. So it's a surreal experience.
I was gonna say, dude, that's like some AAU bleep, but with the world's best players instead. And not some young guys. I mean, that's a different setup. You talked about the Pelicans and the Jazz. Before that game, Chris, members of both teams and the officials all knelt during the national anthem. What was the moment like in the arena?
It's something that I'll remember forever, man. It was, I'm not trying to get too deep and passionate, but, you know, we knew this was coming, and to be there covering that event, just seeing people from all walks of life, black, white, just kneeling in solidarity. And I would imagine, Rome, that, you know, some of those folks who did kneel, like, they probably don't agree this the best method of peacefully protesting, but they did it because they wanted to show the players that they cared. You know, there's a lot of players are still wrestling with if they should do this or not. And, you know, to each his own, you know, but everybody knew. And it was a unique experience, man. It's something, Jim, I think later down the road I could be able to just express what I saw in words a little bit better. But it's something that, you know, we've never experienced before.
It sounds to me like it was a really significant moment, and it's still sinking in. Let me ask you this, Chris. Chris Haynes, my guest, before we move on. You did speak with J.J. Redick after the game about the protest before the game and the message behind it. What did you take away from what he said?
Yeah, J.J. has been one of those guys who's been he's been an ally for, you know, his black teammates and counterparts for a minute, man. He gets it. Like, he understands the, like, what a lot of black people face, and you know, he's been around us for a long time, so I'm pretty sure he's seen a few things. But you know, I asked him about, you know, Donald Trump's tweet last week saying that, you know, he's glad live sports is on his way back, but the minute somebody kneels, the game is over for me. So I asked him about that, because, you know, that's a lot of people have a problem with players voicing their opinions on, you know, the social unrest, the social climate, and you know, people, you know, say they're turned off by the sport because of that. And so I asked J.J. Redick about, you know, what Trump said, and he said, look, first of all, I don't think anybody in the NBA cares if Trump watches basketball. And he went on to say that, I wrote this morning, he went on to say that, you know, there's very important issues that need to be talked about and discussed. And if, quite frankly, you don't see it for yourself, then you don't need to be fans of us, period. And that was very candid, because, you know, the league doesn't want to lose followers. Nobody wants to lose followers. Nobody wants to be alienating a certain base. But, you know, JJ is just, you know, I think the way – him speaking so candidly about it, you can tell there's a level of frustration with him. Like people still don't get it. Like, people still are trying to equate them kneeling during the anthem as disrespecting flags of troops. And so to hear this coming, you know, from a white player at that, is, you know, something that's refreshing to the players, because they know, like, damn, like, we're being heard. Somebody that doesn't look like us understands us. And You know, he definitely made a point at that when he's had those remarks towards Trump.
We are talking to Chris Haynes. Chris, let me ask you, and I appreciate your thoughts on that. I'm glad you shared that. You had a great piece earlier this week about LeBron and the fact that LeBron is actually the loudest voice in the arena, even when he's playing when he's not playing in a scrimmage. Like, what do you make of all of his talking, and what does that tell you about where LeBron is mentally and physically right now?
Well, I think, Jim, I think it's normal. I think that's just the interactions that they have, and we just don't get to hear that because, you know, the fans, you know, the arenas are packed with fans. And so it was just cool to see his interactions with players, with the other team, and not just an interaction, you know, him calling out players, cussing out certain players, you know, going at the refs. You know, you just don't really know what he's saying. And so it was cool. That's why I said, I don't know, like, I still haven't watched any of the games on TV, so I don't know what the viewers at home are being are able to listen to, but we're right there, and it's an empty arena. And I'll say this. So when I wrote that about LeBron, I was doing a scrimmage, and they weren't using those virtual fake fan noises. They were using that yesterday. And so that was kind of drowning out a lot of things, and it wasn't as empty as it was during the scrimmages. And the funny thing is that, you know, I think that's for TV use only, because the players aren't reacting at all to those fan noises. Like, if they're going on a 6-8 run, those fan noises are coming on. Players aren't, like, getting pumped up. Like, it's like they don't even hear it. And that's the difference that I see with fans not being here. Because, you know, players, they react to the fans. They're getting – you can tell their juices are getting even more filled with adrenaline when fans are cheering them on. But, you know, that's pretty much the difference. You know, it's a unique experience just being able to hear these players up and close and personal.
All right, so they react to the fans or the fact that the fans aren't there. Before I let you go, I want to get your reaction to something. You had a chance to check out the NBA's barbershop. You look sharp, except Damian Lillard jumped into the comments and wrote the following quote. Got that good old-fashioned spray paint deluxe, end quote. I mean, damn. How did it feel when you saw that?
You know what, Rome? I think you invited me on the show just to ask me that question.
Nah. I mean, I wasn't going to ask you that question, but that's not why I invited you on. You know that.
Hey, I respect that, Rome. That's true journalism right there. I respect that, Rome. I'm telling you, man. Fake news, Rome. Fake news. I don't know what Dave was doing. You know, maybe there was a little enhancement used. I can't lie. That, you know, look, bro, when you see it, all these photos, I don't know if you got an Instagram, bro, but, you know, they know how to enhance some photos.
Oh, yeah, man, I know.
So, they know how to enhance some photos. So, hey,
filters.
Man, excuse me, pardon me for getting the enhancements that some of these players be getting that fans don't know about. So excuse me for exposing the truth. So Dame, you know, he wanted to call me out. I'll take that. I was looking fresh, and Jim, I haven't had a, at that time, I didn't care what the barber did. I didn't have a haircut in about a month and a half. So I told that barber, do what you had to do. So that was the end of the result. But
My man, you got nothing to apologize for. I got you. You got nothing to apologize for, man. We all have to do what we all have to do. I got you.
Man.
And you know that's not the reason I got you on. But I'm playing with you, and you know I was going to ask you about that. He is the great senior NBA insider for Yahoo Sports. You can also see him on the sideline for TNT. He is the host of Post It Up with Chris Haynes podcast. Never, ever forget. He represents Central Cali. He is the pride of Fresno. My man, good to hear your voice, Chris. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Rome, as always, man. Thanks for having me. You take care, bro.
I want to be talking about Zion Williamson. I want to be talking about the Pelicans and the Jazz from last night. I wanted to have a discussion about whether Zion should have been in that game in the final few minutes. Now, I'm not going to get to that discussion, but really quickly, for the record, I love Zion. I always want more Zion. The game is better when he's on the floor. Except him not being on the floor is not the reason they lost that game. And no, Alvin Gentry did not forget that he had Zion on his team. Trust me, the coach knows. He also knows that there is a minutes restriction. All right, so I'd love to break that down for you. And I would love to get into that, but I have to interrupt that take and that thought to talk about MLB's so-called dream season. Because things apparently are getting that much dreamier, I guess. Let me give you a quick rundown of what's gone down this morning. 9:40 a.m. Eastern. John Heyman tweets, Brewers, Cardinals game tonight postponed due to positive test. Ouch. That's a kick in the junk. The Brewers home opener is postponed. Two teams who haven't had anything to do with the Marlins are having to postpone a game because of positive tests. All right, so again, nothing to do with the Marlins, but they had to postpone. Then we receive word from Craig Mish that two Cardinal players tested positive, and that led to the postponement. A few minutes later, news of another Marlins player testing positive brings the total to, I mean, I don't know, 18, 20? Who knows at this point? At least 20 of the party have tested positive. So 60% or so of that roster has swabbed positive. Then you have Scott Lauber from the Philadelphia Inquirer. He tweets, MLB postponements this week. Phillies, 7 games. Marlins, 7 games. Yankees, 4 games. Baltimore, 4 games. Blue Jays, 3 games. Nats, 3 games. Cards, 1 game. Brewers, 1 game. Yankees and Orioles remained in action by playing 2 games against each other, right? All right, so that's as of right now. That number could grow in the coming minutes. The Cards played the Twins on Wednesday. So, do the Twins postpone their game tonight? If I'm not mistaken, when my family flew back from Wisconsin, they flew on a plane that the Twins were on previously. So do I have to cancel my family this week? I don't know. Let's not forget about the Marlins either. According to reports, they had all that happen. All right, so here's this detail from Jesse Rogers. Quote, news out of Philadelphia where the Marlins have been holed up for over a week. Team is getting sleeper buses to take the infected players and personnel back to Miami. That's a long ride. Rest will stay, then head to Baltimore, New York, and Buffalo for what's going to be a really long road trip. End quote. Sleeper buses. Have you heard that phrase before? The hell is a sleeper bus? What the hell is that? And where are they getting them from? Are they borrowing buses from rock bands that would normally be on tour right now? Are the infected Marlins going to make that 1,200-mile drive from Philadelphia to Miami on Def Leppard's bus? And then the other players, the ones who have not tested positive, they're going to stay? Are they going to stay in Philadelphia, then go to Baltimore and New York and Buffalo? Is that the plan? That's how the first week of the MLB season is going to end, with sleeper buses and cancellations. Again, I'm not even asking this to be funny or clever or smart or wise. I'm asking because I'm serious. Hey, Commissioner of Baseball, is it a nightmare scenario yet? Would you put this in the nightmare scenario yet? The nightmare category yet? Because I would. I'm saying that 60% of one roster testing positive is a nightmare. I'm saying that another team having multiple positive tests is a nightmare. I'm saying cancellations and postponements that are happening hourly is a nightmare. I'm saying freaking sleeper buses are a part of that nightmare scenario. And I'm saying that because I care about the health of the players. Their health is more important to me than competitive balance or whatever other standards the commissioner has for determining if the season is going to continue. And it would seem to me, if we're in the year 2020 and you have to borrow sleeper buses in the middle of a pandemic for a 1,200-mile bus ride, something went wrong. Something went really, really wrong. 18, 20 infected guys riding 1,200 miles on a Whitesnake bus is most definitely a nightmare. That's like some kind of horrible reality show, right? It sounds like the single worst reality show in the history of reality TV. We put 20 guys with COVID on Twisted Sisters tour bus and sent them from Philadelphia to Miami. Watch what happens next. And by the way, if you're the state of Florida and you're already a coronavirus hotspot, how fired up are you to see the COVID Express barreling down to your state? Man, again, I would so much rather be talking about Zion and the Pelicans, but MLB is in the middle of a slow-moving train wreck. Actually, it's a fast-moving train wreck. And now it appears to involve sleeper buses loaded down with COVID patients. When we've reached the point in the story where you've got over 60% of one roster testing positive, multiple positives on another team, postponements left and right, and a sleeper bus full of COVID cases, it is probably a very good time to ask this question. Why are we doing this? For who? For what? And yes, I know the answer already. Money. The same as it always is. But somebody really needs to ask the question, what is the point of this? You could ask the commissioner, but don't bother. Because I know he'll say, everything is going well. This is not our nightmare scenario. It's going just fine. Because we have big rosters. And he'd be hoping he'd get a chance to see what would happen if you stuck a bunch of COVID guys on a bus. Probably that too. Great job, commissioner. Keep up the good work, Commissioner. It's going great. Really terrific work. A sleeper bus full of COVID positives barreling down the highway. I bet those guys are thrilled. A 1,200-mile bus ride. Dudes, let's have a conversation. It's a conversation that you might be uncomfortable with, but you really need to hear. A conversation that you might be uncomfortable with, that privately you do want to hear. I'm here to help. Listen, if you're like me and every other person working from home, you're probably staring at your gray hairs and all of your colleagues' gray hairs on video calls and have been for months now. If you're thinking about coloring your hair and you're freaking out, you're not alone. It's all right. Last week, I heard about Madison Reed Mister. And what caught my attention was the before and after shots of beards. Now, you know me. I rock the goatee. I have for decades. Madison Reed Mister is a gray blending natural color for your hair and your beard. I know some of you are freaking out because you see this and you think, man, that dude looks like he just dropped a bunch of shoe polish on his head. Looks like a dope. I get that. That's not what this is. There's none of that here. We're talking about a blend. It's subtle. Maybe you're not looking for a drastic change. Maybe you just want a little more pepper and a little less salt. Whatever look you're going for, Madison Reed Mister makes it easy to find your color match right there on the website. And they deliver it right to your door, and the process is quick and it's easy. You simply apply the color gel to dry hair, you apply the color activator, you wait 10 minutes, then you rinse and shampoo, and the natural-looking hair color fades gradually. There is no commitment. Go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMR.com. Use the code Rome. Get 10% off and free shipping on your first box of Madison Reed Mister. One more time. Use the code name Rome. You can only get that offer if you use the code name Rome. Do it. Believe me on this one. Pierre Maguire. Pierre, it's so good to have you back. You are now in Edmonton, and you had been in quarantine in Montreal prior to arriving in Edmonton. So, Pierre, how long were you in quarantine in Montreal? And then what was the arrival like in Edmonton and entering that bubble, my friend?
First of all, Jim, it's awesome to talk with you from quarantine here in Edmonton. I was in actually northern Quebec for 14 days. I have a home up there. It's where my brothers and my sister and I grew up. About 100 miles north of Montreal, which was fine. It was great to be there. Couldn't see any friends, couldn't see any family, just had to quarantine with my wife and son. That was it. And then I went to the airport in Montreal this past Monday on the 27th, flew to Edmonton 4.5 hours. I'd never done a flight that long without any service in the plane and wearing a mask the whole time, Jim, to be honest. Landed in Edmonton. Got in a particular car service that the NHL and NBC requires you to take because of how they sanitize the car. Came to the hotel, checked in, had my temperature taken, and I've been in quarantine since Monday afternoon at 3 o'clock Mountain Time.
The new norm. Pierre Maguire joining us. So, Pierre, what's your sense as to what the players make of the two bubbles and how they're adapting to life inside of it?
I think really well, Jim. I haven't been able to talk to anybody face-to-face, obviously, because I'm still in my room in quarantine, but I've done a lot of texting and some calling, and so far, so good. I think the biggest adjustment for the players is going to be being tested every day, obviously, for the COVID virus, and that's something I've been doing here as well every morning, Jim, and I have to pass 4 straight COVID tests before I can actually go to work, so I had my 4th one today at 7:10, but all the players get tested every day on their way into the rink, so I think that's going to be a bit of a chore as we go along here for the players. But I think the biggest adjustment, Jim, will be playing without fans in the building. I've heard from some of the players saying it's really different, it's really unique. They're not used to not having crowd noise, so I think that's the one adjustment they're going to have to make as they go along here.
Yeah, also, Pierre Maguire, my guest, I would imagine, Pierre, especially in terms of playoff hockey, because the fans are such an enormous part of playoff hockey. Like, overall, based on what you've seen in the preseason games, Pierre, what are you expecting in terms of the quality of play and the intensity right out of the gate?
I think the intensity levels will be really high because the margin for error, especially in the qualifying games where it's 3 out of 5, not 4 out of 7, the momentum in the series, if you get behind the 8-ball pretty quick, Jim, will be a problem for the team that falls behind. So the intensity levels will be really high. I'm wondering about the goaltending as we go along, just to adapt to that kind of intensity and the pace with the shots coming at them, and also with the crease traffic. That's a big adjustment for the goaltenders. So we'll see how they hold up. The caliber of play, I think, will be a little dicey to start. And as you go along over the course of a 60-minute game, I think it will get more enhanced and better as you go along over the course of a game.
Pierre, you and I have done this a long time because you're answering questions before I can even ask them. I was going to ask you about the goaltending, like you touched on that. But when you look at the goaltending and when you think about how to evaluate that play, who are the best prepared to be playing in crucial games right now? Like, what kind of an impact could that long layoff have on the goaltenders in particular?
You know, that's such a good question, Jim, because I think the biggest thing is dealing with crease traffic. So if you're a bit of an undersized goalie, I think that's going to be a problem for you. I think if you're a bigger guy, and I think of Andrei Vasilevsky, who's just a gigantic human being who plays for the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think about Connor Hellebuck, who plays for the Winnipeg Jets, Pekka Rinne, who plays for the Nashville Predators. The bigger guys, I think, Jim, will be able to get through this a little bit quicker than some of the smaller guys. And when I say smaller, I'm talking about guys that are 6'1", 185 pounds. They're considered small guys now. That used to be a huge goalie. Now the big guys are 6'4", to 6'6". So those guys, I think, will have an easier time getting used to it than the smaller guys, Jim.
We're talking hockey with Pierre McGuire, and it's fun. Pierre, the teams that are seeded 5th through 12th are jumping right into a 5-game series. When you talk about a sense of urgency, how critical is it to win the first game of that series?
I think really important, especially because of the pod system that you were alluding to before. The trials and tribulations, Jim, for all the players that are in these two pods, one in Toronto, one in Edmonton, it makes it a little bit more of a unique environment and a little bit different. And I think if you fall behind in a series quickly and it's a demoralizing first loss, let's say you lose 5 or 6 to 1 or you lose 7-0, I know it doesn't matter what the score is, but you can get demoralized pretty quick. So it's really important that you stay tight in every game and you stay tight in the series. If you go down 2-0 in a series, I don't think you have any chance of coming back in 3 out of 5.
So, Pierre, what about the top 4 seeds in a round-robin tournament to determine their seeding for the next round? For instance, how do you think those teams approach the round-robin games? Are they going to go all out because they want that higher seed, or maybe are they more focused on getting into a rhythm and staying healthy?
Oh, man, I love the way you phrase that, Jim. Getting into a rhythm and figuring out where they are as a group. There'll be intensity, no question about it. There will be intensity. But it won't be as intense, I don't believe, just because you want to save your roster for when the games really count. You're already moving on into the playoff system. The qualifiers are in a bit of a different pool, obviously. So I think you're going to see teams trying to establish a rhythm, those top 4 seeded teams that you're alluding to, Jim, and then they will find a way to get ready. They'll be more battle-ready and probably more invigorated than the teams that had to go through the qualification period.
We're talking to Pierre McGuire. So, Pierre, what about, for instance, the matchup between Chicago and Edmonton? You've got 9 players on the Chicago roster without any playoff experience. How significant is that, and how much of an edge would that give Edmonton?
It's pretty significant, but the one thing I'd say in Chicago's defense, Jonathan Toews and his 3 Stanley Cups and his 1 World Junior Gold and his 2 Olympic goals really matter for Chicago. Patrick Kane with his wealth of experience, and Duncan Keith with his 3 Stanley Cups, and Corey Crawford with his 2 Stanley Cups. Chicago's got some internal depth in terms of playoff experience that Edmonton does not have. So that's going to help soothe the sails a little bit for some of those younger players you were alluding to from the Blackhawks. The problem for Chicago is going to be containing the quick strike offensive capabilities of the Edmonton Oilers. They got the 2 leading scorers in the league in Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, the most explosive player in the league, I think, in Connor McDavid. You've got one of the best coaches in the league in Dave Tippett for Edmonton with a wealth of experience. So Chicago's got some other battles they're going to have to get through. This is not a perfect matchup for the Chicago Blackhawks at all.
We're talking to Pierre McGuire. So, Pierre, in Edmonton, you're going to cover the Western Conference games. How do you see the conference stacking up top to bottom?
Colorado's really good, Jim. And, you know, I talked about Connor McDavid and how explosive he is. Nathan McKinnon's not too far behind. He's an outstanding player. Cale Makar is one of the best young defensemen we have in the National Hockey League right now, a young man out of the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. They've got firepower in Colorado. They've got big bodies on defense. They've got adequate and good goaltending. I wouldn't say superstar goaltending. I'd say adequate to good goaltending. And I think they're a team that's going to cause a lot of problems. So I look at Colorado. I look at Vegas. Vegas is another team 2 years removed from going to a Stanley Cup final. They've got tremendous firepower and a new coach in Peter DeBoer that really likes to stress structure in all 3 zones. And I think you're seeing that from Vegas. They did a good job last night in a pre-tournament game that they won up here in Edmonton. So I'd say those are two of the better teams. And then don't discount St. Louis, Jim. I mean, they're the defending Stanley Cup champions for a reason. And they're big on defense. They're mobile up front. They're four lines deep. They're a whole lot of nasty to play against, Jim. So you can kind of see teams sorting it out. But I would say those are three of the better teams in the Western Conference right now, in Colorado, in St. Louis and Vegas. I think those are three of the better teams.
Pierre McGuire breaking it all down. We've got a few more moments with him. You know, Pierre, I had a chance to talk to Golden Knights GM Kelly McCrimmon on the program earlier this month. He seemed really pleased with the physical shape of the players, and he attributed that to the fact that a lot of guys stayed around Vegas. Overall, what is your sense as to the conditioning the guys were doing during the hiatus? Did they stay in shape, or were some guys needing to get into shape when they restarted camp?
I think most of the players stayed in really good cardiovascular shape. It's really hard, though, to mimic getting hit and pounded into the glass.
Right.
And so that takes it's a different kind of a conditioning level. So some of the guys, and there were a bunch of Europeans that went back home, especially the Finns and the Swedes and the Czechs. They went back home, a lot of them, and they were able to skate because there was no restrictions on what they could do in public places, whereas we had a lot of restrictions here in North America, both in Canada and the United States. But I would say most of the players, I would say over 90% of the players maintained really good, solid physical conditioning.
And Pierre, one last thought. You mentioned what it's like, the process that you personally have to go through just to go to work, what quarantine has been like and the like. The games do return tomorrow with a five-game schedule on the NBC family of networks. So when it comes to the actual game itself, how different will your broadcast experience be in the bubble versus what it's been like in the past?
Well, first of all, I won't be between the benches in Edmonton just because the space is too small. And so I'm going to be sitting right behind one of the benches, and it's going to be almost as if I'm on the bench, which I did once before during the entire playoff run in 2007 when I was on the Anaheim Ducks bench during the entire playoffs because of their great general manager at the time, Brian Burke, allowing me to do it because they didn't have a spot to work between the benches. So it'll be similar to the 07 final for me. I'll be working tomorrow with Doc Emmerich, who will be at his home in Port Huron, Michigan, and Eddie Olchek, who will be in the NBC studio in Stamford, Connecticut. I'm not sure there's ever been a national broadcast where you've had three broadcasters working, but all three in different area codes and all three in different time zones. So it's going to be a little bit different that way. But I'll leave that up to the professionals in the truck. But I'm looking forward to it, Jim. It's obviously been a huge, long pause. And I think the fans are really clamoring for a lot of hockey to come back on television.
No doubt. One last thought. Because you've been a coach, and we talk so much about the players, if I could ask you about the coaches, you've been a coach. What kind of a challenge is this for the coaches? What is your sense as to how the coaches are going to approach the challenge?
They got to be able to pull the trigger pretty quick in terms of if things aren't going right for them. They have to make adjustments on the fly very quickly. It's not just going to be about the head coach in this hockey. It's going to be about the assistant coaches identifying the need to change trends really quickly, Jim. So I'll use an example from last year's playoffs. In game number one between Tampa and Columbus, Columbus was down 3-0 after the first period. John Tortorella knew if he got blown out in that game, chances were he was going to get blown out in the series. He made three key adjustments. He turned his forecheck very aggressive. From being passive, they went very aggressive. He allowed his defenseman to jump into the rush rather than staying back. And then he told his defenseman, I want you pinching down all the time in the offensive zone. They made those three adjustments. They won game one. They never lost a game in the series. And it's a perfect example of how you need to coach in this Stanley Cup playoff this year, especially in the qualifying round in the 3 out of 5. Because if you don't, chances are you're going to get knocked out pretty early.
Now you know. Breaking it all down expertly, as always. An NBC hockey analyst, he is Pierre McGuire. Pierre, it's great to hear your voice. It's great to get caught up with you. Hopefully we drop the pucks quickly and we can stay after it. It has been missed.
It's a pleasure being with you, Jim. Thank you so much, and thanks for caring about the game. I know you do, and you're an unbelievable fan. Thank you, Jim.
My guest is Daniel Bard. Daniel, great to have you on the show. How are you?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
Really good to have you. In fact, I want to rephrase that. Given what's going on in the world right now, before we get into this season and your amazing story, like, what's it like for you? How are you and everybody around you doing during this really unusual time?
We're good, man. I got married with three little kids, so it kind of just had to be careful in that way, and pulled them out of school and all that stuff. So it's been a weird summer in a lot of ways, but everyone's good. It's close to me, so just trying to trying to keep it that way.
All right, good to hear it. So people can fully understand your story and what you've accomplished this season. Take me back to when you were with the Red Sox. You were a first-round pick in 06. By 2010, you were absolutely dominating the American League with an ERA of 1.93 in nearly 75 innings. At that point, what was the game like for you?
Man, it was fun. It was, as far as just the pitching side, it was, I don't want to say easy. The game's never easy. But as far as just, your mind's in a good place, you're feeling, getting into that flow of the game every time you're out there, trusting your stuff, making adjustments easily. If you do have a rough outing or one where you give up a couple, you bounce back from them quickly because that's just the space that your head's in. And it was fun, man. It was a lot of fun. Doing it in Boston is as good as any place to do it.
All right, so your numbers were still good the next year, and then by 2012, things started to slip. You spent some time in the minor leagues with the Rangers, the Cards, the Mets. What was that period like?
It was tough, man. It was kind of a quick fall from kind of at the end of 11 into 12. Tried to start for a little while. That didn't work out. I had some other issues going on. But, yeah, I mean, you're battling control issues. You're battling, those mental demons that creep in when the struggles get really bad. And then, lose a couple jobs, lose a couple roster spots because of it. And then, what used to be just kind of a fun game that I was getting paid to play was now like kind of, in a way it feels like a life and death situation because you keep losing your job. I'm moving my family around. The steady paycheck is gone. You're hoping to get that next contract, and it doesn't always come.
Daniel Barr joining us. I mean, so you're using words like life and death, demons. I mean, you can sense how serious and how dark this is starting to get. Like, from the outside, it would seem like if you go from dominating the American League to battling just to stay in the league and struggling to find control, it would be a terrifying thing. Like, what kind of thoughts were you having at that point, and what was your mental approach during that stretch?
Yeah, it was kind of all over the place, man. I was pretty young at the time, 27. Had a few little struggles in the minor leagues. Nothing, I guess, on par with that, and nothing that was in the public eye like that was. By doing it and taking place, a lot of it with the Boston media and how much people care there. So it was different. It was a lot for me at that time, and hadn't been through anything that tough before, so I don't think I handled it as well as I could have. But, it was a grind, man. And then, bouncing around from team to team, ultimately kind of retiring from the game in 2017. That's a funny word to use when you're not that old to say retire. But, I was ready to move on. I went to the coaching side for 2 years with no intention of ever playing again. Had my mind set toward that, just being the best, doing like mental skills stuff with the Diamondbacks and trying to be the best at that I could and see where it led me. And very much to my surprise, it led me back to playing the game again. And it kind of gets back to where we are now.
Daniel Barr joining us. I definitely want to make that connection. Before I get there, I want to ask you one thing because this is really interesting. A lot of athletes tie their entire identities into what they do on the field or on the court, and their self-worth is connected to that. You've made the point that you knew baseball was important, but not the most important thing. How were you able to make that distinction, and then how significant was that to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I if you had asked me back then, how big of a part of my life baseball was, I probably would have kind of minimized it. My family's always been important. My faith was important and those things. It's easy to say until the baseball aspect is actually taken away. That ability that's been such a big part of what you do and where your confidence comes from, where your a lot of the praise you receive comes from, when that's taken away, it really tests that. And, for me, I think it really had to happen in order to get me to the point I'm at now. It wasn't overnight. It took years, a lot of perspective shifting, some of it on purpose, some of it, out of necessity. And, that's definitely the biggest shift, I think, is just the way you view the game. Seeing life you know, for what it is, and that there's a lot bigger matters out there. There's more important things, like, you know, for me, raising kids has really changed my perspective on a lot of things. And, you know, you got to be patient with kids, and I think it in a way it helps me be more patient with myself. Yeah, I mean, everybody's journey is a little different, and I'm just trying to keep learning along the way.
So much good stuff in that. Daniel Barr joining us. So Mike Hazen, who was with the Red Sox, was hired as GM of the Diamondbacks, and he wants you to join the organization as a mental skills coach and a mentor. So I'm curious, when you were a mental skills coach, what kind of conversations were you having with the players?
You know, it was a little everything. You know, it was a pretty wide-ranging role in a lot of ways. Some topics would be very baseball-focused, you know, helping guys through the on-field struggles, similar things that I had been through. And then it would range to off-field stuff, you know, relationship advice or, you know, just different kinds of anxiety, maybe away from the field. And the serious stuff, mental health type stuff, I would obviously refer them to someone who was more trained in that than I am. You know, but a lot of the stuff was just kind of like being a big brother to a lot of those minor league guys, and having been through a lot of the same stuff that they were going through, just lending an ear and you know, letting them know like life's going to go on or whatever it is, whatever they need to hear is what I tried to be there for. And the cool thing about it was, you know, I came out of it with, man, I think some lifelong friendships with the other staff members, with the Diamondbacks and players as well. So it was a great 2 years. I wouldn't change anything about it. And, you know, I think that was one of the biggest reasons that led me back to playing, got me my love for the game back, my love for, you know, being in the clubhouse, feeling like a contributor again, all those things that people miss.
Yeah, I mean, like, right, if that were the story and you had worked your way into that position and you were making a difference and impacting guys and developing these relationships, that in and of itself would have been absolutely amazing, but that's not where that ended. Like, the story goes, you started to play catch with the guys as well. Like, what were those sessions like, and when did you notice that, like, man, this is coming back to me?
Yeah, it just kind of happened organically, man. You know, I told the guys I worked with that, you know, I wanted to be on the field. I didn't want to be, you know, stuck in an office and have people have to come find me to have meetings or whatever. And I want to be on the field because that's where I'm comfortable. That's where I, you know, I'm good at forming those relationships. So I was on the field as much as I could, and I'd be out there shagging batting practice, playing catch with pitchers before the game, things like that, that any kind of extra coach would do. And I was doing it to get to know them and help them in different ways. And I just had a couple of them, I think it was last year in 2019, you know, saying, hey, you still got it, dude. You need to play again. And I was like, I initially just completely laughed it off. And, you know, because that was so far from my mind, was ever playing again. And, you know, a couple more guys said it, and I did know it felt really good. Like, the throwing felt different than it had for those 5 years where I was struggling. And, I think it just kind of slowly crept in, and then the off season hit this past winter, and, you know, I continued to just play some catch back home to get my arm into like a really good position where I could actually get on a mound and test it out, and, you know, got myself in shape and continually kind of surpassed my own expectations, and got to the point where I was like, I think I have to do this. Like, it wasn't an option anymore. It was just like, I'm being pulled back into this thing. And, you know, it's been awesome. It's been a cool experience, even if it ended tomorrow.
Yeah, but at the same time, it was not like this side hustle, like this thing you were doing on the side. Like, you, in your own words, right, you had to burn the boats. You had to leave your job as a coach. You had to go all in. Was that kind of a scary proposition? What was the mindset there?
Very much. You know, as good as I felt throwing, and I knew I could, you know, throw the baseball in the mid-90s again. I was, you know, throwing strikes in these bullpen sessions, but what I hadn't done, I hadn't faced hitters, I hadn't faced major league hitters, I hadn't thrown in front of, you know, a lot of eyes that matter, a lot of, you know, fans, anything like that. So I really hadn't tested it, except I was like, okay, I knew I couldn't throw on a mound, I couldn't get on a mound and throw strikes for 5 years consistently, and now I can. So maybe it'll be different in all those situations too. And I didn't want to like feel it out. Like with the Diamondbacks, I didn't want to put them in an awkward position where I, you know, had one foot in, one foot out, hey, can I throw some bullpens but kind of keep my job and just see how it goes? And I knew that's just an awkward position to put them in, and they deserve better than that. So, you know, made the decision to quit that job and basically inform them I'm quitting, and the reason I'm quitting is because I want to pitch again. You know, kind of was hoping it would be with the Diamondbacks at first, and there was, you know, just because of conflict of interest, that wasn't possible because of the role I'd been in, with the relationships I've been had with players, and which makes perfect sense. And so I had to do like a tryout, you know, 3 days after quitting my job. I was standing on the high school mound in Scottsdale, Arizona, with about 20 scouts that showed up, and, you know, letting it go as much as I could. And that fortunately threw the ball really well that day and had several offers. I mean, it was kind of a crazy day.
Daniel Bard, my guest, amazing story. So you end up signing a minor league deal with the Rockies. The season restarts. You make the Rockies major league roster. Saturday, you entered your first major league game since 2013. Ultimately, you go an inning and a third against the Rangers. You throw 20 of your 25 pitches for strikes. You hit 98 on the gun. You get your first win, Daniel, since 2012. Can you put into words what that experience was like?
Man, all I can say is it's happening. It happened faster than I thought it would have. You know, I wouldn't have done this. I wouldn't have made the decision to pitch again if I didn't think all this was possible. But for it to happen as kind of as quickly as it has, you know, the quarantine, the time we were back home, was kind of the best thing that could have happened to me baseball wise. I was able to go home, throw to hitters back home like 10 or 12 times. In those weeks leading back up to our summer camp. And that really got me ready, not just to go and stand on the mound and pitch and, you know, hope to have a job, you know, in the minor league somewhere, but actually to go make a big league roster. So I didn't think it would all happen this fast. You know, I know it's felt good from the beginning, but, you know, it's definitely even surpassed my expectations. So, but now it's just like everything's back and ready to go compete and help this team win games.
It is Alvin's look back at the week that was. Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? My name is Jim Rome. A tremendous Monday to you. Nice to have you here. Hope you had a good weekend. Your week's off to a good start. That was a really interesting weekend. From a sports standpoint, I am all over it. Let's get at it. Let me start with the Miami Marlins, because they had themselves a weekend, didn't they?
Yeah! They never really considered not playing from my standpoint.
Despite having multiple positive tests for COVID in their clubhouse, they went ahead and they played their game anyway.
We're taking risks every day.
Fantastic job. And by fantastic job, I mean one of the dumbest things ever. And that could not have been held any worse.
Email.
Now, five words to the MLB season. Nice to know you. Goodbye. Yours, Incubus. You know what, Mike, for one of the few times you are helping him. My man, Brandon Boyd. Listen, whatever tomorrow brings, I'll be there.
When you're hauling nuts, swim on your back to keep your nuts dry. I'm out.
Speechless. There's a golden ticket in a call like that. Go ahead and give it to
him.
You go, Jerome. Just don't let it get wet.
The restaurant is still open. You can still go to Magic and get
it. For whatever reason, the Ike's chain changed their business model to Ike's Strip Club. I would become the second person ever to go to a strip club for the food. Yo, Van Smack, what's the champagne room? No, I'm good. But I am here to get my Sando. Take that to go. A good feeling that somebody from Boise is going to come in and pick me up and make this better.
Lou wasn't there for the leg. He was there for the best clams in town.
I would never allow that on my show. That never happened. Jonathan Smith.
You know, what you know is what you got tomorrow. And we're going to play some games starting in the middle of September. Do we know exactly who we play the first game yet? No. And that's how we've approached it.
You're not getting brain surgery, right?
No.
Okay,
no.
I need
brain surgery because I'm always buying into the Mets garbage and their nonsense, Jim.
Got it.
But I am getting hip replacement surgery.
I don't put this in the nightmare category.
COVID crisis. Hey, man, I got your answer. And high five. Problem solved. Dodge that
I'm
bullet.
Trying to tell them that I can dodge bullets.
You have a nightmare
on your hands.
I don't see it as a nightmare.
John Rahm. Hey, John. Who are you listening to these days?
The latest album of Juice WRLD, R.I.P. His new songs are, you know, really, really good. It explains a lot of what was going through his mind. He's also a singer. I think a lot more people would enjoy that album.
You gotta eat that, dog.
Twitter!
You don't mess with Oak. Yours, Sonny Bono. Dude, I don't block people ever, but I'll make an exception in your case.
Fuck!
You gotta take that,
man. Do it.
Luke Walton joining us once again.
There's a couple really awkward silences.
that happen throughout the game that you kind of realize there's no fans there.
Bruce Feldman joining us.
You had DeForest Buckner's hands were over 11 and a half inches, the biggest that they've been measured at the combine. This guy's hands are almost a full inch bigger.
Whoa.
You know, it's just crazy.
Go crazy, Nick!
And that's over Bregman's head. And
what are you punishing Kelly for if you're saying he should be punished? For saying, nice swing, bitch?
Nice swing, bitch.
Good luck, Robbie. I'm sure you'll handle that perfectly like you've handled everything else in the past 12 months. Dave Roberts is joining us back in the jungle. Was he or the team looking to send a message to the Astros last night?
I'm going to say no. You know, we've all seen the video of him warming up and breaking his own window in his house.
Maybe he was looking to send the house a message. Maybe the window showed him up.
That's fair.
The shirt wasn't tucked in and the hat was backwards. That's a disgrace. Yeah, there are people that wake up at 3 a.m. to go cut the grass and mow the greens, and you treat the golf course like that, Jeff. Tuck that shirt in and put that hat forward. I want to see those shirts tucked in, all right? I want to see some long pants out there.
Way to go, Adam. One of your better efforts. He is Wesley Woodyard.
What's up, Jim? What's up, Jungle?
What keeps you coming back for more at this point?
Man, I just want to go out there and I want to use my platform of playing football to inspire other people to be better.
We go to Santa Barbara. Hello, Professor.
Love that Harvard of the West reference.
Walter Capps. He said to me, I want you to know, young man, you shape opinion. You have a significant responsibility with that microphone.
Oh, my God. I totally have goosebumps hearing that. That is so Walter.
Court gesture sidekick Ariel Helwani.
Chill. I've been carrying you on my shoulders, on my back for the last 2+ years. Frankly, I'm tired of it. And I feel like I just beat him 10-7. 10-8 maybe, probably 10-7.
Bad girl.
Move over, Chael Sonnen. Tito has a new rival, and his name is Silk Panties.
Silk Panties.
My calls make Silk Bra look like Silk Panties.
Silk Panties.
Bad girl.
Leans in short, gets it back and scores.
The trouble he had last night shooting the ball and then want the ball in that situation and miss that shot and come through with the follow. The game winner. One thing went through my mind when I saw that. Oh! Chris Haynes got that good old fashioned spray paint deluxe. End quote. I mean, damn.
You know what, Rome? I think you invited me on the show just to ask me that right
Nah.
Oh, man. I love the way you phrase that, Jim.
Your boy Silk Bra is going to be running for one of the 3 open seats on the city council.
There's a red hand coming out of it right there.
That's it.
Appreciate you.
Ichiro's the all time hit king.
Yo, let's get cracking.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Jim. Good talking.
Give my best to Reed Jr.
Jim, man, you continue to be a great man. Love you and respect, bro.
Silk Panties.
Bad girl.
Loving his lines in his script.
Not sorry.
Bad call on my part. You know, one of many.
Nice swing, bitch.
Thank you so much for having me.
2 more freaking weeks.
Good night now!
I don't know what my favorite part of that is. There are so many things that in that that made me laugh so hard. Silk Bra, what's up?
Not much, bro. How you doing, bro?
Did you ever think that after being on this show and listening to this show and participating in this show for 2 decades, you would, in fact, in this, the weirdest year ever, would end up in the year of the bra?
No, bro. When we were at the Blossom Music Center in Cleveland, and I was out of my mind. I was like in my early 20s. I think you were holding a press conference. I think I answered a question for you, bro. I apologize for that, bro. But yeah, I never would have thought this, bro. It's crazy.
All right, so first of all, great reset on the Blossom, man. There were some gigantic mosquitoes that night out in the woods in Cleveland. All right, so what's going on? What's the latest?
Well, first, don't worry about the clones, bro. You know, they're cracking on you for vacation. The clones often hate on people who live a certain lifestyle, so forget about that. And clones back away from IKEA. It's a great Swedish company. Back in the day, I bought this table called a Jokkmokk. It lasted a good 3.5 years. It was awesome. Yesterday was a great day, bro. The Lakers, gritty win. Dodgers win again. I love your McCullers take, bro. He says, you talk trash on a batter, you should be suspended. If that's true, Lima time would have never had a start. But lost in all this Joe Kelly sauce is that beautiful 2-game sweep of the cheating kooks in Houston. I'm loving the Dodgers bullpen, which hasn't been a strength in the last few years, but they're looking really good. Let's hope Manfred, although I don't have a lot of hope that he can get this thing together. Now, the whole thing about Tito, it's not a surprise that his announcement broke on TMZ. I'm just going to leave that there. I don't want to go low. But, of course, if your boy Silk Bra was going to run, you know he'd announce it on the worldwide greatest sports talk show ever, and that's the Jim Rome Show. So here's what I'll say. I can't technically say I am running because there's some paperwork to finish up and stuff. Shout out to our great city clerk, Robin Estanislaus. He has been an advocate for me. And luckily, I live a block away from City Hall, so my commute won't be long. I can just walk. But yeah, I'm running around today doing some legwork. I can't say for sure. I can't say I know Tito, but in Huntington Beach with me, it's not 6 degrees of separation. It's like 1 degree. So I know we'll be crossing paths pretty soon at some forums and things. So technically, I am not official because they haven't pulled my papers yet. That'll happen next week when you're on vacation. So I wanted to get this in, Brat. Your boy Silk Bra is going to be running for one of the 3 open seats on the city council. I got my first 3 signatures today from mom, dad, and my sister who are watching on the great CBS Sports Network right now. So shout out to the Silk fam. And yeah, brah, it's going to be premium content all the way through November, brah.
Dude, really sincerely, I want to ask you this question, man. Is it the proverbial pub grab or Silk? Are you serious about this? And if, in fact, I throw everything I have behind it, because I'm thinking about it, if you get in, will you do it? Can you deliver? Can you execute? Is this a serious thing or just a troll and a pub grab?
Rome, it is a pub grab for Tito, probably, but for your boy Silk Bra, as an educator, I was born in Orange. Parents raised me from 0 to 2 in Santa Ana, and then they moved here in 72. I've been here my whole entire life. I love this city. I think there's more that unites us than divides us. There's a lot of issues important to HB residents. I have deep roots in the community. My friends do. Not all my friends agree with me, brah, but it's all about the city of Huntington Beach and being the best for all the residents of Huntington Beach and for the future. We got a power plant we got to knock down. We got some empty Superfund land over here. There's tons of issues. It's not a national thing. It's a Huntington Beach thing. But, brah, you know I'm in it to win it. When you get back from vacation, I'll have some more information about maybe my super PAC, my communications director, my campaign manager, bro. That's going to be happening. So it's a quick race. But, yeah, I'm in it to win it, bro.
Good night now.